We finally got some insight into what's bugging Kemba Walker in that left knee of his, and we get into the most tradin'est season of Trader Danny's career. It's the 2014-15 Celtics season on this Tuesday, Locked On Celtics. Millie, let's go. Rainy J's back with the vengeance back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. This the truth like 34. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. Crowd goes crazy, most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, focus like Danny at the deadline, global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line, play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day, trying to stay in tune with the C's, it's the best way. Melly. Hey there, John Corrales here, MassLive.com, Boston Celtics beat reporter, welcoming you back to another Locked On Celtics podcast. Thanks for downloading. Thanks for continuously downloading, making the show part of your daily routine. It's a great show to add to whatever it is that you do daily. Gyms are back open. Maybe you're going to work out. Pop it on the treadmill. Are you going to work? Pop it on your way to work. Lunch break? Whatever. It fits. It fits all sizes. I want to thank you for making this part of the daily routine. Today, starting off the show with a little bit of news from Brad Stevens, Kemba Walker, the Celtics. We found out about his knee. Also, a couple of words here about Kara Lawson and her thoughts on her time with the Celtics as she takes the Duke job. Segments 2 and 3, the beginnings of the Boston Celtics 2014-15 season, where 9 different trades were made between the offseason and throughout the season. We're going to get to part 1 of that. And that's coming up in segments 2 and 3. So let's start with Kemba Walker and his knee. We're sitting there wondering why the Celtics are so careful. Why are they so cautious? Well, Brad Stevens on Monday actually finally revealed that Kemba had some soreness in that left knee after some of the individual workouts. So we went through a couple of individual workouts and he developed a little discomfort. Now, how serious is it? I don't know. The Celtics are not making it sound serious. Brad Stevens did characterize it as probably better than it felt when he actually returned and was playing. But minutes restriction is still going to be there. The Celtics didn't have him practice again on Monday. So Sunday, Monday, those two practices were off. So basically the Celtics gave him 4 days off. They are actually off on Tuesday. So really no Celtics news coming out of Tuesday. And then Wednesday they get back at it. And they did say, Brad Stevens did say, Kemba's going to do more on Wednesday. He didn't say he was going to miss any time. He's going to play in the preseason or exhibition games. He's going to play in the seeding games. At this point, that's the plan. And the plan is for him to get to a point where the playoffs start and he's ready to go. This is all still a strengthening plan. This is all still a plan aimed at getting Kemba back to that 100% confidence, 100% strength, and ready to go in the playoffs. So as of right now, we know that there's been some discomfort, whatever that is. Still don't know exactly, and I feel like we do have to try to find out exactly what the discomfort is. Where is it in his knee? And next time he talks to us, we're going to try to find out. What is it? Is it tendonitis? Is it something else? Where in the knee is it? What's bothering him? For now, the Celtics being cautious. And that's all I can say. The discomfort's there, and they're letting it kind of subside. And they're going to work him in. They've got a plan, and hopefully that plan works. Because having Kemba is better than not having Kemba. And even though he had that bad stretch when he finally did come back, you'd like to see him be back and available, because if the Celtics are going to make any kind of deep run in the playoffs, they're going to need him, especially when we know Gordon Hayward's going to be out for some portion of time when he leaves to go be with his wife. If the Celtics are still playing at that point and he has to go and be with his wife as she's having the baby, then the Celtics are going to be without one of their key players. It'd be very disadvantageous if they were without two of their key players. So we'll see how it goes. For now, we're not going to get another update on Kemba until Wednesday. It does not sound serious. It does not sound like he's going to miss time. It does not sound like the playoffs are in jeopardy. However, it is concerning. And after all of this time, after him coming back saying, hey, the knee feels great, I really needed this, there's, you know, it's a little bit jarring to have to talk about this. So we'll just have to wait and see. But that's the latest news out of Kemba, his knee, and what the Celtics are planning. Still going to play seeding games, still on pace to play playoff games, and that's, unless something goes wrong from there, we'll see. In the meantime, Kara Lawson was introduced as the new head basketball coach of the Duke women's basketball program. She had some very, very nice things to say about the Celtics, her time with Boston, and I will encourage you to go to masslive.com/Celtics. I was a participant in her introductory news conference, a video conference, her Zoom. I was one of the media members that was there, and I heard her talk, and I wrote on masslive.com/Celtics, Kara Lawson on leaving the Boston Celtics for Duke. It's been an emotional 3 days. It's been tough. She was asked what it was like. She was asked about her departure from the team. She said those words. It's been an emotional 3 days, man. It's been tough. Then she paused and I counted it out. 24 full seconds. 24 seconds. You think you watch an offensive possession and how long that goes when they, if they commit a 24 second violation. That entire time, she was stuck silent trying to compose herself. She tried to talk a couple times and she had to stop herself because she didn't want to let her emotions kind of overflow at that point. She then went on to say that, you know, the relationships, she wanted to talk about the relationships there and how hard it is to leave between the roster and the coaching staff, that she's got deep relationships built all over the place. And this, I'm not going to belabor the point that I made yesterday when it came to Kara Lawson, but I encourage you to read this story because I encourage you to look at just how meaningful it was to her that the Celtics, she walked in there and she was just a coach. And the quote here is, the Celtics players have embraced me. There wasn't an adjustment period, I didn't seem like, at all. They absolutely listened and respected me from day one. I think players respect players, and that's been very evident in my time here with the Celtics. That's legit. That's the money quote. That's Kara Lawson played this game at an extraordinary high level, the highest level possible, and she succeeded. She won a championship. She was an all-star. I mean, what more do you want? She knows the game. She understands the game. And she walks in with that resume. And it's impressive to me and important to me that this team full of young men didn't give in to any stereotypes, that this organization from the coaching staff to the front office made sure that they've got people in here who are like that, that they set the tone and made sure that everybody understood and respected who she was as a person and a player and as a basketball mind. And this press conference really just hammered that home, that this team embraced her, accepted her, and not once did her gender mean anything. So I know I said a lot of this yesterday, so I'm not going to go on and on about it, but it's important. It's important. And I'm glad that even though she decided to go to Duke and go back to college, I'm glad that she had this experience. And this just means that the next woman hopefully has a similar experience. And that's just something that I think is really important. Now, in the meantime, the Celtics are going to make a little bit of a promotion inside. They've got Tony Dobbins, who is one of their basically player development video guys. And he's going to be promoted. He's going to move to the back of the bench which is important. He's done a lot of work. Jaylen Brown really respects him. Jaylen is worked very closely with him. Tom Westerholm had a story. Just follow him at Tom_NBA. He had a story on Mass Live earlier this year that he tweeted out when that came out, and it explains kind of the relationship that Jaylen Brown had with Tony Dobbins. So this is a nice promotion from within, and importantly, a person of color getting promoted from within and rising in the coaching ranks with the Boston Celtics. A nice opportunity there, and it's something that is also important at this time in the NBA that it's notable and should be noted. So all of this coverage again on masslive.com/Celtics. When we return, I had a conversation with Mike Dinan about the 2014-15 season. We start with a couple of moves setting the tone for the future. A move that you're going to hear about in this podcast that pays off a couple of podcasts from now. Think you know it if you're following closely over the past few years, but that's coming up on the Locked On Celtics podcast.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
The 2014-15 season is just busy. Just busy. Danny Ainge earned his entire contract in one season. So we start with the June selection of Marcus Smart and James Young. Of course, James Young, notable for making Bill Simmons on the air give a little fist pump. He was very happy about that pick. We see how that went. But Marcus Smart, first round pick, sixth overall selection. That seems to have worked out very well, Mike.
Yeah, I would say so. Smart is, he makes winning plays. We all know that. And there really is a lot of truth to that. You have to really watch him every night to understand what that means. So if you're a devoted Celtics fan, you watch every game, you get it. Marcus does whatever the game needs, whatever the team needs at the time to win a game. It's usually something to do on defense, like stealing the ball, yanking it out of somebody's hand. One of the games this season that was close and exciting, one of the best games that I can recall, and the season seems like it was a year ago now, but they played at Oklahoma City and they won a 1-point game, Celtics did, and Smart made the play right at the end. SGA was going with the ball for the Thunder, and they only needed one basket, and Smart just snatched it right out of his dribble, and that was the game. That's the kind of plays that Smart makes. And at the time, I think everybody was happy to get him because he was, like Red Auerbach said, an instigator, not a retaliator.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think there's the Marcus Smart. Obviously, we're at peak Marcus Smart right now. Like, he has become one of the most popular players in the city. Now, universally loved. Kara Lawson, in her introductory press conference with the Duke women's basketball team, I asked her about Marcus Smart because he had talked about her and said that they built a bond and they're lifetime friends now. And she says, I love this quote about her. I love this quote from her. I love Marcus Smart. He is such a unique player. He's a player with texture. And I think it takes a special palate to really love how smart he plays. Okay. First of all, the fact that they call him Smarty is awesome. Like, One of my favorite moments of this past season, silly little stupid moments, is Grant Williams in the scrum. Marcus Smart walks by and he just goes, "Grant!" And Grant goes, "Hi, Smarty." That was it. One of my favorite silly moments. Just Grant Williams going, "Hi, Smarty." That would just cracks me up to this day. Still cracks me up. I love that they call him Smarty. She says that he's a player with texture and that it takes a special palate to really love how he plays is something like I thought about that. And I think that is something that uniquely that a player would say. And obviously Kara Lawson is a really, really good basketball player. Her resume speaks for itself. But to say that he has texture and the special palette to love how he plays, it incorporates all of those little things that we're talking about. And obviously the stuff that we love about Marcus Smart, even the emotional outbursts, even the things you accept that, I think part of that texture is you accept some of the emotional outbursts. You accept some of the technical fouls. You accept maybe some of the things that you would like him to rein in. But if he doesn't have that, then he doesn't have all the other fire. And while you want to see him continue to mature, and he has, notably he had that incident with his hand that where he broke a framed picture in Los Angeles that almost cost him his career. But he's matured from that. But all of the things that you get, the positive things you get, you're like, hey, you know, maybe sometimes he's just going to pop off on the refs and you just got to hope that it doesn't happen at the wrong time.
Yeah, I think what you're getting at is the theory that sometimes a person's biggest strength is also the biggest weakness.
Yep.
That what gives him the edge that he plays with is also something that if it goes too far can be injurious to him and to the team. But he is getting there. You know, he's obviously known for flopping, but since he became a starter in the past couple of seasons, he's not been a flopper anymore. He's weaned that out of his game. Yeah, he'll hit the floor, sure. James Harden, for example, that night, the Celtics made that big comeback and Smart baited him into two offensive fouls. Yeah, Smart went down pretty easily, but you know, he's subtle about it now. And at times he used to be over the top, like he'd go flying, he'd launch himself, and it was comical, you know?
It was.
And he's not that way anymore. He's more nuanced. But he's not relying as much on the flopping. It ended up with him being on the all defensive team last year, and I think the refs give him a little more respect out of that now. Yeah. So I'm glad to see that. But he's a god. Yeah. I mean, he's, you know, how it was said, I think he said it, I love Boston and Boston loves me.
Yeah.
So that is 100% true. Yeah. And he's like the king of weird Celtics Twitter also.
Totally. Because it's very easy for him to be that. I can tell you that the player inside of me will forever, like, give me a team full of Marcus Smarts and I will roll with that squad against anybody. If I'm playing a game and I got four Marcus Smarts next to me, I feel real good. And that's, you know, it speaks to, you know, how far he's come. And I'm a big believer in the biggest strength is your biggest weakness, but he has overcome it. As Marcus Smart likes to say, I flop on defense, your favorite player flops on offense. So it's just kind of a funny way to acknowledge it, but you're right. He has kind of toned that down a little bit. So Marcus Smart joins the team here in 2014. That's a nice start, and now that makes Marcus the only player to have played for only Brad Stevens. He's the longest tenured Celtic. He's the guy. He's the one guy that's left from all of this that has played for Stevens his entire time. So that's important to note as well. And yeah. part of why there's only him left is because Danny Ainge from this point on makes nine different trades, nine of them, three I believe in the offseason, six during the season, and this is just insanely active. There are 22 different players for the Boston Celtics on their official roster. And this doesn't even take into account the Austin Rivers select, you know, the trade for Austin Rivers. You know, the guys, there might be a couple of others who came, didn't play, and just boom, you're gone. So the Celtics are just flipping everybody because they're trying to get themselves to you know, create cap space, and you know, they're working towards something. So the first of trade, go ahead, sorry.
Sorry, just going to say, Danny, maybe the only general manager in the NBA in it ever who traded both a father and a son from his team, Doc and Austin Rivers. And neither of them played for the Celtics either.
That's an interesting way to right.
That's got to be something. Austin never suited up.
That's got to be.
Didn't either.
Right. So two people that Danny Ainge traded that never played for the Celtics. That's a really interesting trivia question. We'll let that sit there for a little while, because in a couple years that'll be an interesting bar. You win a few bucks in bar trivia on that one. Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram. All right, yeah. So the first trade here that he makes in this offseason / season, this is an important one. And this is like part now, part later. July 10th, Marcus Thornton to the Boston Celtics from Brooklyn. Tyler Zeller to the Boston Celtics from Cleveland. And a 2016 first round pick from Cleveland. So the Celtics get Thornton, Zeller, the pick in a three-team trade, and they only gave up a second round pick because it was a big salary dump. They had cap space. The Cavs were trying to shed salary so they can re-sign LeBron or sign LeBron back from Miami. So the Celtics were like, yeah, we'll help out. No problem. So they pick up Thornton, Zeller, and a first round pick for nothing. This is a huge, huge deal. But that's going to happen. Why it's such a huge deal comes later. But Marcus Thornton does join the team. He does play for the Celtics and was that season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tyler Zeller was, Danny was in full collecting assets mode.
Yep.
In this season. Sorry. Jump in.
No, that's fine. So like Marcus Thornton was at that point, like a guy that you could look at as a supporting player on a team that might've been trying to do something, you know? But that didn't belong. He didn't belong in Boston. Like Boston wasn't trying to do anything, but and this is why I talk about sometimes teams with cap space that maybe whiff on signing a big time player or one of their targets. Sometimes those teams go and they just sign a plan C or a plan D when their first two options aren't there. And this is why I think, like, hey, sometimes maybe the best thing you can do is just keep your cap space, understand that maybe you whiffed on that, and you can do a move like this, because this move sets up future moves, and which we're going to see in a little bit. But they get Marcus Thornton in here for not too long. They get Tyler Zeller in here for, he plays in Boston for a couple of seasons, and he spent, three seasons in Boston, two and a half seasons in Boston. And I thought like he was okay. In this 14-15 season, he did okay. Played 20 minutes a game. Gave you 10 points, gave you just about 6 rebounds. He wasn't going to be anything spectacular, but hey, you know, every once in a while he came out there and put up a decent game. And I always thought he was solid. He was a solid guy.
Yeah. I agree with that. When we talked about one of the previous seasons in the Perkins trade, one of the guys that came to Boston was Nenad Krstek. And the term you used for him, serviceable, that was Tyler Zeller.
Yeah.
Right? Serviceable, meaning he could do just enough to justify being on the floor, getting his playing time, and you didn't have to worry about him. You know, he was solid. And he even had a game winner. Pretty sure it was against Utah. If you think back, I don't know if it, when it was.
Uh-huh.
I didn't bother to research it, but just remembering, he caught a lob pass and made a basket at the buzzer from underneath to win a game. Now, Brad Stevens had to trust him. So, yeah, you know, he got it done, just what they needed out of him.
Yes. So Tyler Zeller joins the mix. Another move that I think kind of flies under the radar in Celtics history came 5 days later. Avery Bradley was signed to a 4-year, $32 million deal, which at the time, this was a restricted free agent year for Avery Bradley. So they actually played this pretty well. They said, all right, you can go kind of test the market. The market didn't quite come around for him. They came back and he signed an offer that was kind of within what the Celtics were willing to pay him. And he got himself a 4-year, $32 million deal. So his first season there, this 2014-15 season, he was making just over $7 million. Now remember, initially, people were like, oh God, why did he overpay for Bradley? And then Avery Bradley goes out in 14-15 and has himself a pretty decent year. And the next year and the year after are also pretty good years. And he created Danny Ainge, invested in a guy, and this was part of the asset accumulation. Just so happened that the asset was already on his team, that he had Avery Bradley here, and he got him on a decent deal that from July, when people thought he was overpaid, to like December, all of a sudden the tone switched, and it was like, oh, actually, this is a really good deal. And it came out like pretty quickly. People were like, oh, yep, never mind. Good deal.
Yeah, I think that was a good example of armchair GMs who think they know what a team should be doing. But it's Danny's life. You know, it's what he does. And Bradley paid off the contract pretty well because he really grew in his time as a Celtic, and I think they got their money's worth for sure on that. $8 million, the only thing at the time it seemed like a lot of money, but a couple of years later, it was a perfectly reasonable contract.
Yep.
It was pretty much of a steal at that point, too.
Yep. By the time Avery Bradley was eventually traded away, it was a good contract. Like when it's so wild that the dynamics of things change. If you see something in the moment, people are like, oh my God, it's like putting anything under a microscope. You could put a piece of your skin underneath a microscope and you look at it and like, oh my God, what is this hellscape? And you just pull back. You're like, oh no, that's just my arm. I'm sorry. Never mind. Like you overreact. People overreact to things in the moment. And that's, especially now, because now we're getting into like we're getting deep into the Twitter world. People have reactions like crazy, and I'm sure these reactions were happening all throughout history, sports history. But now with social media, we just get bombarded with things, and there are people who will overreact. There are people who will troll. There are just assholes who just want to get people mad at them. Like, I don't understand that person. The person who just says, watch this, I'm just going to get everybody mad at me, and who just enjoys that. Like, I don't know. I don't understand the psychology behind that, but I know it. I see it when it's happening. And there's just so many wild range of people on social media. And I tend to see most of them. And you just get these initial reactions. They're like, oh God, people, just calm down. Let's kind of see how it works. You don't know how it's going to work out. So Avery Bradley worked out.
It's kind of like a little kid who does something bad, knows it's wrong, but wants attention from mom and dad.
Right.
And you know, you're going to look for attention, that's the way to do it now, is have some hot take on Twitter. And, you know, it was before Twitter, too, because you had talk radio, sports talk radio. It's been around for a long time. And that was the place pre-Twitter where everybody could go and say their stupid stuff. And now it's, you know, it's even more prevalent now because you have so many talk shows. In Boston, there's multiple sports talk stations. Hot take industry is big. It's never gonna go away now. It's just too big. People who are willing to say whatever, willing to say anything for a paycheck.
That bothers me.
It's everybody needs content. So multiple sports networks put on shows like that, and they get people who will say outrageous things just to get a reaction, and it seems to work. If it didn't work, people, you know, they wouldn't last. So the good ones, good. The ones that get the most attention and are the most provocative, they succeed, and everybody's going to try to copy them. It's never going to go away now.
Yeah, I don't know. I just saw that Felger and Mask, it's like this monster radio rating that, I mean, I can't stand their show. I can't stand their show because I know so much of it's performative, but people listen. What are you going to do? People listen.
Not to digress too much, but you had a thing with Gary Tangway about that very thing, didn't you?
Yep, I did.
Where you had a little bit of a debate with him, and he admitted to that, didn't he?
He did. I got him on a podcast.
Yep. That's like playing a role.
Yep.
So.
Hey, I mean, that's fine. Like, I get it. I can't do it. It's not in my personality. I can't go out there and spew things that I don't believe. If I say it, I believe it. And I think you could be entertaining while you're saying things that you believe. I mean, you can still be passionate about the things that you say, but whatever. We'll leave it at that. Avery Bradley's contract was good. That's the net effect of all of this. Next transaction. I'm just rolling down his transactions page on Basketball Reference. There's just so many. Chris Humphries out to Washington, cap clearing move. Keith Bogans out in September. Bye, Keith.
We miss you, Keith.
That ended up getting the Celtics. So it's Bogans to Cleveland. And the trade is for John Lucas III, Eric Murphy, Dwight Powell, Malcolm Thomas. Really, the only players that mattered in that deal was Dwight Powell. So because he ends up getting traded shortly as part of a bigger deal. So the Celtics, again, flipping Bogans, who was nothing, leaving. They get back a piece that they're going to use. They also get second-round picks that turn into Abdel Nader, Kadeem Allen. Those guys had brief cups of coffee with the Celtics. Tomorrow, we begin with a moment that should be a national holiday, or at least a holiday in Boston, at least for people who are participants of Weird Celtics Twitter and some members of the media. It is the day that Evan Turner was signed by Danny Ainge and the Boston Celtics. We're going to start tomorrow's podcast with that. Again, Celtics are off on Tuesday, so don't expect any news. Tomorrow is going to be mostly just a history podcast, unless some news breaks. But for now, we know that the Celtics are going to be off, unless something else big happens tomorrow, all about Evan Turner and the next few moves that Danny Ainge makes. So please subscribe if this is your first experience with the Locked On Celtics podcast. Hope you've enjoyed it. Hope this has been a nice little ride, fun little show. Who knows what's next? So subscribe or follow on Spotify. Wherever podcasts exist, this show is there. Rate it 5 stars. Give it a good written review. Tell people how awesome it was, how hard I work. Please, it helps raise this show up in the rankings. It's already the #1 Boston Celtics podcast in the world. But I'm not happy with that. I'm not happy with that because I'm still like 28th overall in basketball podcasts. Going to rise up the rankings, baby. Got to make sure that people know. Represent Boston. Represent the Celtics. Give that 5-star rating. Give that good written review. Pump the show up and get it higher in the rankings so people know how strong this Celtics fandom is. Do that. I will appreciate it. I'll give you a virtual hug, because I'm not going to give you an actual hug. I don't know where you are. Plus, you know, social distancing and all. But virtually, high five. Big hug. And thank you for listening to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.